Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting with Craig Hemke, founder and editor of tfmetalsreport.com. And Craig, we're going to focus on the precious metals in a couple different aspects in this interview. First and foremost, the relationship, the inverse correlation between precious metals and the US dollar. Now, this isn't a consistent inverse correlation, but there are times in the market where we do see the dollar move up and gold move down, and then the dollar sell off and gold move up. Today's a bit of an anomaly in the sense that the US dollar is higher and gold opened up lower, but has garnered a buy after the first couple hours of trading. Still, overall, it does seem to be this correlation that investors need to understand is continuing to drive the gold price lower when the dollar pops and support it at right around this 1900 level when the dollar drops. The dollar's still quite depressed in terms of where it's sitting on the dollar index compared to 6 months ago, 9 months ago. But fact of the matter is we are seeing a bit of a bounce in the dollar here. Craig, what do you think about what's now an inverse correlation between gold and the US dollar?
Well, first and foremost, it would be foolish to just accept the generalist line that it's always an inverse correlation, that gold goes up and the dollar goes down, and that's really all there is to it. You get that a lot of times when people are writing headlines and they don't know what else to write about. If it were truly an inverse correlation on a daily basis, then gold would, you know, if the dollar index is where it was 2 years ago, then gold should be where it was 2 years ago, right? But it's not. I mean, the dollar index was 93 2 years ago. It's 93 now. Gold was $1,300 2 years ago. It's $1,900 now. The dollar, and you and I have discussed this over the years, is either really a headwind or a tailwind. You know, if you're in a bull market and the dollar is falling, it's like you got the wind in your sails and you're just moving right along. But if the dollar's rising, then it's just something you fight on a daily basis. And the reason for that is, there are pre-programmed algorithms, HFT. We know, 90% of the stock market now is HFT. So what percentage of the COMEX futures market is HFT? I don't know, but it's 90% of the stock market. It's a pretty significant percentage on COMEX too. You don't have pits anymore, you know, like Trading Places where everybody's yelling and screaming, you know, and writing things on pieces of paper. Those are all gone. So what we've seen here recently is this predominance of these algorithms, as if nothing else matters, because really since about the middle of August, so it's now a full 2 months, it has been lockstep. Dollar goes up, gold goes down. Gold goes up, dollar goes down. I lost my train of thought for a second, but you get the idea. And you can see it on the 1 minute candlestick charts every day. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's just a moment in time. However, we've seen these correlations come and go. Corey, I remember you and I talking years ago about the dollar yen being this, like, what is this all about? It's and this way that went on for a year and a half. I don't think this will go on for a year and a half. It's been 2 months. I think what we're mainly seeing is just an unwillingness of carbon-based traders, let's put it that way, to take significant positions. COT reports have barely changed over the last couple of months as well. I think a lot of folks are just, you know, hesitant to get too much of a commitment prior to the election and, you know, what the next stimulus bill is going to be and all this kind of stuff. So people are sitting on the sidelines, said you just got these computers trading things back and forth, and that has brought us to where we are. What we don't want, obviously, is to have this continue and have any move back to 2000 or beyond in gold be contingent upon the dollar index going to 85, right? Because again, what the fallacy of all of this is, the dollar index just simply weighs the dollar against other fiat currency that would be being devalued at the same rate, right? I mean, they're printing euro and yen and pounds and Swiss francs and everything else at roughly the same rate the Fed is printing the dollars. And so if they're all devaluing at the same rate, then relative to each other, their value doesn't change, which is how the dollar index stays at 95 or 100 or whatever. Because, and how silly is that? That you'd pre-program a computer to trade something as important as gold and sound money off of changes of a fiat currency compared to other fiat currency. I mean, that in itself, in its own right, is kind of farcical. anyway, at the end of the day, as I was reminding everybody on my site just yesterday, if you want to think, you know, if you want to look for things that make you think, okay, this is changing. One, you got a really big move. Now, granted, on a dollar down day last Friday, but that was a really big surge with a big bunch of new open interest that came into gold, which kind of gave you the feeling, okay, these are the kind of moves you get as you're, that's not just short covering. That's some renewed excitement. But as it, in terms of the dollar, what you wanted to see, and again, I just talked about this yesterday, what we need to start seeing is a return to kind of normal action where gold and silver go up regardless of what the dollar does, or maybe even go up on days when the dollar is going up too. So that, you know, now we're talking about interest rates again and real interest rates and negative nominal rates and all these other things impacting a desire to own gold in all its forms, not just simply these pre-programmed algos making their trades, you know, at the speed of light.
Yeah, in all fairness too, though, Craig, it seems like gold and especially the gold stocks are pretty positively correlated to what U.S. markets are doing right now. And I think that just speaks to the overall confidence of investors and optimism when markets are moving higher. Well, they're also spreading money more broadly into some of these other sectors. But when they get nervous, they sell everything. So the investors right now are very quick on the sell button. But one thing that you even mentioned there is these COT reports. We've seen very minimal movement over this volatile time when it comes to the COT reports. And one thing I've noticed is over the last about month and a half now, we've noticed just generally lower volume on the GDX, on GDXJ. To me, that all just goes to show that people are distracted. And I think it's a good thing that they're not just liquidating all their positions, but no one's getting aggressive right now.
No, that's for sure. And again, look, we're reaching that peak of indecision, right? That peak of concern or worry or whatever as we approach this U.S. election, and you wonder who's going to win and, you know, what direction all of that's going to go and whether it be contested, you know, all these different things that people are unwilling to make big bets. And, you know, you take it back to the last election too, Corey. I mean, we were all told, oh my God, if Trump wins, the stock market's going to crash, right? And so if you set yourself up, just say maybe that's what you thought. So you bought yourself a bunch of puts because you actually thought Trump was going to win. And then you go to bed on election night and the Dow's down 800 points or whatever it was, and the S&P or limit down, the S&P futures. Then you wake up the next morning and everything's back to green and you're told, oh no, Trump's going to be great. So it just goes to show you. I mean, there's a reason why. When you get burned like that in the last election, maybe you're going to wait until the thing's all done before you place any substantive financial bets again. The other part, too, you mentioned the mining shares. I mean, this is all part of a pretty consistent, repeatable pattern. There's news for the mining share, especially in a bull market, around earnings time. You know, we're going to get into earnings season in about 2 weeks from very late this month into the first 10 days or so in November. Beginning this week and stretching over the next week or two, you get the production reports. That's really the only bit of generally good news that you get from a mining company, a producer, during the quarter. Because once the earnings reports are out, what more good news do you have? Maybe you get a drill result or something like that. But a lot of times you get bad news. You know, you're going to get some dilutive acquisition. And so, yeah, there's this run up that we're, I think, getting into now ahead of the next earnings reports, as we should. But then once that's over with, you kind of get, well, nothing going to happen here again for 2 months. I might as well move out of here. And, you know, the long-term investors keep their position, but the traders go, maybe I'll go trade some Tesla, because at least that moves, you know? And so this is not atypical, I guess, in what I'm saying. And I would, you know, this drop off in volume and interest during these intervening months between earnings. But I will say, as an example, Kirkland Lake reported their production for the third quarter. I don't know what it was, Monday, something like that. And the price that they had, their average price at which they sold their gold in the third quarter was, I think, $19.07. The average price in the second quarter was about $17.20. So they're making an extra $200 an ounce, 10%, all things, everything else being equal, I mean, the energy and all the other costs haven't gone up much. That's tremendous leverage, you know, with especially on the big producers. It's hard to imagine that as these earnings reports start to come in, that they're not going to be stellar. And it's equally hard to imagine that people won't try to front run that a little bit. So maybe things will pick up here in the next couple of days.
Yeah, maybe. We have seen some nice earnings reports out of the majors. And you know what? It does at least, I think, help provide some sort of a floor for these majors. But again, the sector, it's just slow right now. But that goes to show with a lot of sectors. So we'll keep on following along. But really, there's not much more to say about what will drive these prices, because I think it just needs to get some clarity in terms of what is on tap or who gets elected. And even from there, what happens after the election? Because, again, still just so many question marks around the world right now. Craig, thanks for your time today. Hopefully next week there's a bit more for us to talk about. But, again, using some of the charts and some of those COT reports does go to show how much interest has waned in the sector. Craig, thanks for your time today. Have a great rest of your week.
All the best, my friend.